Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, our guest is Crystal Martinez, president of Fieldwork Webwork. Welcome, Crystal.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to chat with you today. We've had a great amount of qualitative representation. So I think that the qualitative industry is going through one of the most interesting kind of evolutions during this pandemic. But before you dive into kind of what you're doing, would love to learn a little bit about your journey in the inside industries. I always like starting with this question because everybody comes from such varied backgrounds. So would love to hear how you ended up doing what you do.
So this is kind of a fun story for me because I think most people that I run into have this journey of, you know, sort of starting in one place and an opportunity comes and they move on to another. And, you know, through the years, they've worked for a couple of different really great companies. And for me, my journey is similar, but all within fieldwork. So I actually started at fieldwork in 1997 in our Denver location, which is a qualitative focus group facility, and started there hosting, you know, we would greet clients and respondents for their focus groups, that sort of thing, and worked my way up through, you know, some of the ranks at the Fieldwork Denver office, and then eventually came out to Chicago and was working in our Fieldwork Schaumburg facility location, and then moved to the downtown location where I worked for our network office, which is like a fielding department. They manage multi-city and multi-methodology projects. And then from there, it was about almost 15 years ago that we started seeing online research happen in very rudimentary ways. And, you know, we like to kind of see what our clients' needs are and try to fill those needs. And that's exactly what happened. We realized that this was, you know, going to be the way of the future. Certainly didn't realize it was going to be quite where we're at right now. Yeah. That was kind of when we started dipping our toes into the online research side of things. And that is where I remain today. We've opened up a division dedicated to online research and then research that takes place outside of our fieldwork facilities. So that's my primary charge.
That's awesome. So you're one of the rare people in our industry that's kind of always been in it. And then even rarer, working your way up in the same organization.
It's a pretty amazing company to work for, and we just the culture there just is so supportive. There's a lot of people who start at, you know, at a lower position in fieldwork and move their way up. That's very common with my colleagues, and I'm just, you know, when you love it, it's hard to leave, and so I never did.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It sounds like, you know, at least your division online has been in your DNA since day one. Is that, and when we're talking about online, I mean, does fieldwork do both quantitative and qualitative online, or is there like a heavier emphasis on qual or quant? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so our emphasis is certainly on qualitative, I think all throughout fieldwork. But that doesn't mean that we can't assist with quant projects. We have clients who are, you know, looking to achieve both. And that's often where my involvement in quant is our clients are trying to, you know, that's a smaller piece of a larger project. And so we'll assist them with that side of things. But primarily, we focus on qualitative research.
Okay. And so for you, I mean, I've been talking, like I mentioned in the beginning, been talking to a lot of moderators, people that focus specifically on qual. And they've, you know, they've obviously seen a huge shift from majority in-person focus group qualitative work to shifting their businesses entirely online. Did you experience a transition like that as well? Like, I'm assuming you do some in-person qual as well, or has it always been online?
So fieldwork as a whole, we have 15 focus group facility locations that focus on in-person research. And I would say that when you're looking at, you know, the focus of our business as a whole, you know, within the company, it's in-person market research. So it was a huge adjustment for us when the pandemic happened, kind of shifting things, you know, from one focus to the other. Now, because we already had the infrastructure in place, we were already conducting online research. I think it made the shift a little bit easier for us. But really what we did was we were fortunate enough to have all of these resources who were initially focused on in-person research. And when the load there was lighter, that allowed us to take those people and have them shift back to online and provide the support where we needed it. And now, fortunately, we're starting to see things shift back. We've been in person really for some time in all 15 of our locations. But we're really now starting toward the end of this last, the end of 2020 and now into the new year, we're starting to see a lot more in-person research coming back. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. And you're the first person to mention that in-person's coming back, which is great to hear, some normalcy yes. in our industry returning and just normalcy in general. I'm curious though, backing up a bit, like I haven't had the chance to speak to someone that worked in an organization that's actually managing in-person focus group facilities. Mm-hmm. What were you doing with the facilities when no one was there? Anything creative, interesting, or like that you were using those spaces for, or were they just kind of nobody touched them until people came back?
So what's interesting about it is there really wasn't a ton of time where they were completely empty, depending on the market, you know, because certainly some of these things were city and, you know, local law specific. But really, we saw about a month and a half to 2 months where things were just very much shut down. Our offices were empty and there were we were collecting cobwebs. But after that, it was kind of a combination. Some of our employees coming back to work, you know, whether it was because of their specific job roles that required them to be there in person, or some people, you know, just needing a space to kind of get out and get away. And so, you know, about 2 months, we left things pretty empty. But after that, we had enough work that, you know, there were some days where there would be nobody in the office. But we were back to conducting some in-person research, primarily product testing, things that kind of, you know, require someone to be there physically in person. That was kind of how it initially started out. And those things were keeping people in the office pretty early on.
Yeah, that I think that's one of the main differences that I'm hearing, like, is the type of work, because most of the moderators or people in qual I've been talking to focus primarily on focus groups, right? The traditional mm-hmm. in-person 8 to 10 focus groups. But it sounds like you're doing in-person research that not necessarily focus groups, like product testing, where it's very difficult to do research virtually with product tests. What are some other types of qual that's hard to do online where you really need someone in a facility interacting with the product?
Yeah. So definitely usability research is high on the list. We've found that there's a lot of medical usability, specifically, you know, device testing, that sort of thing, that, you know, you need someone to get their hands on that device and interact with it. And, you know, and often, you know, there's a decay period. Okay, read the instructions, play with the gadget, walk away for an hour, come back. What do you remember? Those types of things. So, you know, certainly when there's a physicality of it. it's been interesting too. There are some industries that rely so heavily on confidentiality that moving those types of interviews online is just not a reality. So things like trial research, where it's just absolutely critical that that is confidential and that nothing is leaked about what is being, you know, talked about and reviewed. Those things are hard to move to an online setting because even in the best case scenario, there are ways to collect information and capture screenshots and record with a secondary device. So some of those things where, you know, you just don't have a choice. But it looks a lot different. You know, we used to put 30 people in a room and never think twice about it. And fortunately, Fieldworks facilities are very large. That has been working to our advantage because we can still bring 10 to 12 people into a room and have them spaced apart in a way that, you know, is according to safety guidelines, but also just making sure that people who are coming are feeling comfortable and confident and safe while they're there.
Tell me more about that, because you're the first company I talked to that's, you know, has the benefit of having large facilities, having work that necessitates in person, you know, besides like the social distancing guidelines, wearing masks. What are some things that you're doing differently now during this pandemic to make people feel safe?
Yeah, I mean, really, that is absolutely critical. We won't have any work to do if respondents won't come in and see us, right? And they have to feel safe to do that. So I think an important part of it is the communication upfront and setting the respondent and our clients' expectations about what they're going to see for in-person research. So, you know, all of that communication upfront about, you know, when they arrive, what are the steps that they're going to take, what should they expect when they get there. We made little changes that made huge differences. Nobody's picking up pens and signing in when they arrive at our focus groups anymore. Now everything is done electronically through the respondent's own mobile device. So they don't need to, you know, interact with our screens. So it's little changes like that, I think, that have made a real difference in making sure that our clients and our respondents feel safe.
I love that. Is that, that sounds like something that's going to last beyond the pandemic, right? Because it just seems so much easier for everybody involved to not have to check in, like already be checked in. Is that something that you'll be continuing post-pandemic?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Some of those shifts felt like it was going to be so hard to enable that it took us a long time to do it. And in some sense, the pandemic was the nudge that we needed. But that's definitely an example of one of those silver linings. People are coming in more quickly. We feel a little bit more prepared for their arrival. It's also an indication of participation. You know, before we would invite a respondent and, you know, I mean, we do reminder calls and we're expecting them to show up, but, you know, the day of, sometimes they don't, or, you know, that sort of thing. But if these people are taking the extra step to kind of complete these things ahead of time for us, it just shows us that they're that much more engaged and, you know, committed to participating. And so it's a real silver lining. It will certainly stay beyond our pandemic. And we have a couple of things like that, you know, where you just kind of feel like, okay, it really has improved our processes. And it wasn't easy getting there. Certainly there were, you know, some growing pains, but there are a lot of silver linings there for sure.
That's cool. I mean, is there any other interesting examples you can share like that of things that you feel like, okay, this is going to change the way that we do qualitative research post-pandemic? I'm interested, is like, are there any other things kind of like the checking in via mobile that you'll keep beyond?
So one of the bigger shifts that we also made during the pandemic was moving to recruiting on screen instead of with a paper and pencil. We used to, you know, print out a screener and have our recruiting team, you know, on the phones kind of taking the respondents through the questionnaire on paper and pencil. And we talked about, and our IT team, which is absolutely incredible, worked very hard to move that to an electronic recruiting process. And it took us a while to get there. And this was certainly one of those things that the pandemic sort of had to push into overdrive for us to kind of streamline some processes, especially with people working remotely. But this is definitely an example of something else that will stay behind. We're saving on paper, environmentally, it's greener. Those are all great things. And even though it took some growing pains to get there, we've found it's been more efficient for us. And of course, it allows our staff to work remotely when they need to. So even if we're back full force in person, if people need that flexibility, we're able to provide that going forward. That feels really exciting.
That is exciting. And it's funny how, something like this, something like the pandemic, and I've seen it across industry, not just qual, but quant, adopting things like mobile that we've been talking about for years on the quant side, right? Like, I feel like this has accelerated that. And net, I feel like it's good for the industry overall that we kind of went through something like this to wake us up and say, okay, we gotta think more seriously about this technological shifts.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Switching a little bit, I want to talk, this podcast, our listeners are kind of broken up into two sides of the spectrum when it comes to multicultural marketing, those that are really well-versed and, listen to our podcast to kind of stay abreast of what's happening in the industry from a multicultural marketing perspective. And then we have the other side, people that, are just starting their journey in multicultural. So I'd love your perspective on, from a qualitative research perspective, brands and companies listening, what are some key things that companies should think about when conducting qualitative research among multicultural audiences?
Yeah. Well, I think representation is key. And we're kind of in this place right now where not only is the world shifting because of the pandemic, but there are so many social changes going on right now that just have us way more aware, in my opinion, in a really great, exciting way. And so, things like representation of, seeing yourself out there makes a huge difference to an individual. And so, I think one of the most exciting things about the end of 2020 for me was nearly every industry event I attended, all of which, of course, were virtual. nearly every single one of those events, they were talking about representation in one way or another. And so I think that, there were some companies out there that were aware and, working to be better at representing multiple cultures. I think multiple genders, just kind of across the board, there's an awakening where we're seeing better representation, period. And so, with researchers talking about it, because their companies are, these companies are coming to them, hiring them to look into this and help them broaden their reach. It's a really exciting time. Really exciting.
I agree. And I know, you're a company that's trusted, that's been around for a while. I'm sure you have some legacy clients. Are you seeing some of that? Like, some of your clients ask that maybe in the past haven't asked for representation from, from a respondent perspective. Mm-hmm. Do you see more companies coming to you and asking you for that?
Yeah, we are starting to see a shift. We're also seeing small changes, things like even just the language that's used in screeners. It used to be you'd get a screener and it's, are you a male? Are you a female? Are you black? Are you white? Are you Hispanic? Those sort of things. And, we're seeing changes where people are being more aware even of the language that they're using. So, terms like Latinx are included in the screening materials. So even little things like that, where a company may not necessarily be working to reach as broad of a, you know, a respondent pool as we'd all like them to be, but they are starting to realize that they need to be more mindful of it. So even those smaller tweaks, I think, are setting us in the right direction.
That's great. That's great to hear. And you're right. I mean, you know, things, how we ask questions, I'm actually going to be part of a panel where we talk about that in the quantitative research industry. Like, how do we re-examine these basic demographic questions in light of this awakening, like you mentioned, which is such a good point. You know, another point that I'm curious your perspective on, you know, I think depending on the moderator, depending on the company, there's differing opinions on whether a moderator should reflect the respondents group's cultural identity. So for, you know, whether it's gender, right? If it's a female group, how important is it to have a female moderator? If it's a Latinx group, how important is it to have a Latinx moderator? Like, what are best practices? I mean, what's your thinking there?
Well, I don't want to discount the ability of a really fantastic moderator to break in and have some really meaningful conversations with people who are, you know, different from, you know, who they represent. So, you know, do I think that a male moderator can sit in a group of females and have meaningful conversations? Absolutely. So I don't mean to discount that. But I do think that there is a different comfort level that comes with, you know, being around people and having conversations with people who understand your experience. You know, you can sort of lean into the conversation in a different way. And so having that representation, I think, really is critical. It makes a huge difference. And you will absolutely get different answers from participants. Even, you know, some of those things are subconscious. You know, we hear a lot about, you know, subconscious bias, things like that. It may not even be intentional, either on the moderator's part or the participant's part. But if you're sat in front of someone that you feel like understands your experiences, there's definitely a different comfort level, and you're going to get different responses out of those people. So I think that kind of representation is really important.
I agree. Yeah, I 100% agree. And also, I mean, depending on the product or service, right? Like you mentioned, there's some great moderators that can connect with people regardless of gender, ability, sexual orientation. But there's also some products or services that are, you know, very personal, very specific, either to your cultural background, to your gender, to your sexual orientation, that I think companies should be aware of as well.
Well, and that representation, it always goes back to, you know, there you hear about offensive ads in the news, and it's like, well, if XYZ person had been in the room, they would have been able to tell you people will find this offensive. And so, you know, it's just it's another example of, you know, why that representation matters. It's that different perspective that you won't get if you don't have that representation there present, you know, in the research or at the table when you're discussing, you know, the products, that it's critical.
For sure. And believe it or not, we're here up on our time, Crystal. Thank you so much for all the great insights that you've shared. And it's been a pleasure talking to somebody who's back doing in-person work. I hope, you know, I hope more companies experience getting back in person, because I miss that as well. For people that want to connect with you, reach out to you, what's the best way to connect with you online?
So you can visit me at fieldwork.com. That's the, you know, the main website. I am listed there under the entrepreneur's contact page. So you're welcome to reach out to me. And yeah, for people who aren't sure if they're ready to get back in person, reach out. Let's have that conversation. I can give you a tour of a facility remotely to get you a feel, you know, for what we're doing to help keep people safe while conducting in-person research. So I'd be happy to talk about it.
Great. Thank you so much, Crystal. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.